It's 11 minutes past six. Now, so many questions have emerged in the aftermath of the Martin Place siege. For example, why was the gunman granted permanent residency in Australia? Why wasn't he on a security watch list? How was he able to get a gun licence? Did he have a gun licence? The PM has identified those questions. No doubt he's been asked them and has been asking himself those questions a lot over the past few days. And now he said there's going to be an urgent inquiry to answer them. He made this announcement at a press conference today. Philip Khoury from the Australian Financial Review, where he's the chief political correspondent, was watching this press conference and he joins us now. Philip, thank you very much for joining us today. I suppose these questions were kind of obvious and they definitely do need to be answered.
Yeah, how are you, Willard? Yeah, look, absolutely. I mean, I think everyone wants to know. And, yeah, this has all come out in the aftermath, actually, about the, you know, the background of this character. But, yeah, and I guess, you know, it is an embarrassment for government, state and federal, because, as Tony Abbott said, they have no higher duty than the safety of their populace. And here's a bloke who's, you know, had sort of red lights flashing all over and slipped through everything, slipped through, you know, state government systems, slipped through federal government systems, slipped through security systems, and you know, managed to hold 17 poor people hostage in Sydney CBD when, you know, no one sort of really bothered to notice, and worse, that he was dropped off a watch list some years ago.
One of the elements, though, that does seem to be at the very least ambiguous at this point is whether or not he did have a gun license. The Prime Minister has been saying that he did, and asking the question about how that could happen. The ABC is reporting that he didn't have a gun license. At least that's the understanding of the ABC. Are you any clearer on this?
No, I'm not, mate. We're trying to get to the bottom of it, but it seems that the New South Wales Police are disputing the fact he had a gun license. Look, it's significant, but not that significant, if you know what I mean, in the context of what's happened. You know, the fact he had a gun, you know, it's pretty easy to get an unlicensed gun these days, whether you've got a license or not. And, you know, if he didn't have a license, I'm sure he still would have been able to get one. But look, if the PM's made a boo-boo, it's a bad one, but it doesn't sort of detract, I think, from the broader exercise here, which is to commission this sort of whiz-banging, sort of very quick inquiry, if you like, into how these systems appear to have failed.
It is very quick. It's meant to report back at the end of January. I don't really know how complex it is to conduct an inquiry into an event like this, but is that enough time?
Well, I guess there's no precedent, is there? I mean, this stuff would be fairly readily available. There would be records of his, you know, his refugee application and his granting of his permanent visa. I mean, our correspondent John Kerrin today reported that that the Iranians tried to extradite this fellow back in about 2001. Now, I think Darrell Williams would have been the Attorney General then under the Howard government. I mean, maybe there's a file there as to why that extradition wasn't granted. I assume this information will be readily available. It's just whether you can assess it all and call people, especially over the summer period. But it certainly shows the government's in a hurry here. They're not going to dither on this. And I would imagine there'll be some fairly hasty announcements afterwards about, you know, even more rigorous approaches to immigration law and powers to do things to people who are here and you know, and send them home and things like that.
Well, one of the elements that Tony Abbott has already flagged is possible changes to gun laws. But isn't that where the gun licence question actually becomes really important? Because if this is obtained illegally, then I'm not sure how gun laws necessarily affect it.
I think you're right. Now, look, I think Tony Abbott made a really good point. You know, if it weren't for John Howard's gun laws, you know, God help us, God knows what this bloke could have been armed with. You know, I mean, you know, it's made a lot harder to get. You know, he had a double-barreled shotgun. He caused enough tragedy with that. You know, but imagine if he had a semi-automatic or an automatic weapon, which are now thankfully much harder to get. So, look, as I said, look, if you're going to be a criminal or a thug or a lunatic like this bloke, you know, you're always going to be able to get your hands on a firearm. I mean, every other clown in Sydney seems to be able to do it, and it's, you know, it's just unfortunate. I don't know, you know, short of banning guns outright, which is probably never going to be able to be done, I don't see how you're ever going to stop them getting their hands on something.
It's going to be undertaken, this inquiry, by the secretaries of the departments for the New South Wales Premier and Cabinet, as well as the Prime Minister and Cabinet. They're going to oversee this inquiry. Did he explain why that structure?
Well, it's because it's joint federal state. I mean, because the systems of, you know, as far as the Prime Minister is concerned, systems have failed at both levels of government, you know, whether it's security and visa things, which is a federal government responsibility, and it's a state government has responsibility for things like bail laws and things like that. I think there's a nice irony, Wallard, that the head of the Department of Premier in New South Wales is a fellow called Blair Connolly, who's one of the sort of most young and brilliant federal public servants we've had for years, and Tony Abbott sacked him when he got into power a year and a bit ago, because he'd committed the evil crime of designing the carbon price for the Labor Party, even though he'd actually also designed the GST for the Howard government. He was put up against the wall with everyone else. But he's now been trusted along with Michael Thorley, the new head of Prime Minister and Cabinet, to quickly and expeditiously do a thorough review. And I, knowing him, he's very good. I know they'll do a good job.
Tony Abbott made a really interesting point yesterday where he said, look, there may have been failures and there are all these questions I want to ask, but we need to acknowledge that even if there weren't failures, that doesn't necessarily mean that we could have stopped this attack happening. Basically admitting that there will always be cracks, someone like this can always find their way through them. That sort of thing is almost an irreducible risk. I thought it was an extraordinary thing for him to say. I said yesterday and I say again, I think it was a courageous moment of honesty from him.
It was. I mean, there's always this, when they brought in these tougher terror laws a couple of months ago, a lot of people complained about impinging on, human rights and, violating personal space and so forth. And as Abbott said, look, it's always a balance and sometimes you've got to shift the balance one way or the other. But what he said yesterday was, short of, locking this guy up, separate to his criminal background, on suspicion of terrorism, short of sort of having someone with him all the time. Even if he left his house, got on a bus, went into the CBD, you wouldn't have known what he was going to do. He just walked into a coffee shop until, it was too late. You're never going to be able to stop this completely. You can do your utmost to minimise the risk and stop it. But I think it was an honest assessment.
Right, but did he back away from that at all today, given that he's now announcing this inquiry and in a way kind of hinting that he thinks there probably are failures in the system?
Look, I think he was more worried in that context that the fact this bloke wasn't on a watch list in the first place.
Right.
That he had been on a watch list and he'd been dropped off.
In around 2008, I understand.
I think so, I'm not sure. So the point is why? Had he been on a watch list, then maybe, then maybe someone would have picked something up, a little sign that he was about to do this or whatever. So, again, there's no absolutes with this. There's no right and wrong, but it's just, we have systems. This fellow fell through the cracks in all of them, and there's an element of having to cover yourself here politically too, because people are now asking these sorts of questions. Once the initial trauma of the tragedy rubs off, it's okay. Well, how the hell did this bloke, who let him in, who gave him a visa, and who took their eye off him? And then they're questions the community's asking.
Yeah, perfectly reasonable questions, perfectly reasonable to seek answers. I don't think anyone's questioning that. It will be interesting to see how that ultimately unfolds when they report back in January. Philip, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Wallet.
Philip Khoury from the Australian Financial Review, where he's the Chief Political Correspondent. We'll lead Ali with you for Drive. It's 19 minutes past 6, 0418 226576, or Twitter at RN Drive if you would like to contribute some thoughts. I've got some coming in. I'll read some out soon. But up next, we're off to Pakistan.